following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to your weekly soccer deep dive covering Europe and beyond, where I'll offer you insightful and memorable content. I'm your host, DJ Pa, and this is Off the Pitch. Welcome back to another episode of Off the Pitch. I'm your host, DJ Pa, and today we're going to be breaking down the Ballon d'Or ceremony by recapping the award winners, as well as mentioning the high-stake matches that took place over the last week. Let's get it started. So since it's fresh in my mind, and I'm recording on October 28th, when the Ballon d'Or was revealed, we're going to start with that. The first trophy that was announced was the Copa Trophy. If you don't know what the Copa Trophy is, it is the best player who's under 21 years old. So, from here, there was five nominees who made it to the top five. It was Pau Cubarsí, center-back from Barcelona, Kobbie Mainoo, defensive midfielder from Man United, Arda Güler from Real Madrid, who's a center-attacking mid, and Savinho from Man City, who's a right-winger. And the winner was Lamine Yamal, the person I did not mention. If you don't know who Lamine Yamal is, I've talked about him before on the show. Back to my first episode when I predicted my awards for this ceremony, I had him winning this trophy. I got it right. And I just think it's incredibly well-deserved for this player who's so talented and gifted. He plays on the wing and is very impactful when it comes to generating lots of crosses. And he gets lots of assists. And occasionally, once he takes shots, he's very effective and can get a goal whenever he wants. He's very good at dribbling. He keeps the ball on a string. And you just can't ask anything more of a 17-year-old. Another thing about this award was Lamine Yamal was the youngest player to ever win this trophy. Like I mentioned, this is an under-21 trophy. Not under 17, 18, 19, or 20. Under 21. So it's even more impressive that he broke the record for the youngest player to receive this award. To put into perspective, I was older than he was when I was playing in my senior year of high school, which was on a definitely smaller scale and much less expectations than what he goes through on a daily basis. He even finished top 10 in the Ballon d'Or rankings and could have been higher if his club had more success. Obviously, you cannot put that on him since he's only one player, but you really have to wonder what would happen if Barcelona had won, for example, maybe the Champions League, where he would have his name in this conversation for the Ballon d'Or. So like I mentioned, other nominees were Arda Güler, who actually got second place in this award. At the Euros, he was very impressive. He was a rotational player for Madrid during the season, but he definitely stepped up in a bigger role for his country over the summer. Arda Güler is just a very technical player with a high football IQ. Like I mentioned, he's a center attacking mid. He's very good with the ball at his feet, and he's always scanning to make decisions and to set up his teammates. Another player nominated was Kobbie Mainoo for Manchester United. Over the course of the last season, and this season as well, he's had a large role for Manchester United and the English national team. He plays as a CDM with more of a modern approach. More in the past, you'll see physically gifted, tall, very strong midfielders that are built for contact and playing rough. But he is very strong for having a small frame. He's a very thin guy, but he makes it up with very technical capabilities, being able to dribble well, being able to tackle well, just being quick on his feet, and being able to defend whenever the team needs him. Another player that was nominated was Pau Cubarsí, Lamine Yamal's teammate at Barca. He's also another 17-year-old, which lots of repetition for Barca's first team. He was first given an opportunity under Xabi, just like Yamal, but has since earned his role with Hansi Flick. He's very strong, quick, agile, and just loves to throw himself at the ball and throws his body on the line whenever it matters. He is very important for Barca's system and a player to look forward to in the future. For the Yashin Trophy, this award was given to Emiliano Martinez. In my pick, in the first episode of my podcast, I had Andrei Lunin winning this. And I just think that this is a completely wrong decision to give this to Emiliano Martinez. I will say this. He did dominate in the Copa America. He had 5 clean sheets in 6 matches. And he qualified at the Champions League and the Premier League. Over the course of the season, I feel like he was definitely one of the better goalkeepers. But in these nominations with other good candidates, I just do not think he was as nearly as impactful as other ones. I believe that France football just has a clear bias towards Argentina players. I see that other players who were nominated for this award won league titles and international trophies as well. And I'm not sure why Martinez was selected as the best one when it's clearly he clearly did not have the stats to prove that. Like I mentioned, Lunin should have won this award. Although he was a backup goalkeeper and played less games than Martinez, he led Madrid to the UCL. In more important games in La Liga, he won La Liga too. While their best goalkeeper, Courtois, was hurt, they relied on Lunin, and he was their best player during that stretch. Another player to mention is Unai Simón, who had 16 clean sheets in La Liga last season. Unai Simón, he won the Euros in the summer, so that's already makes him equal with Martinez. And winning the Euros is way harder than winning the Copa America. He faced 20 total shots in the Euros and only allowed 3 goals. He had 6 expected goals, only allowed 3 of those in. He had an 82% save percentage, and which is visibly more effective than Martinez was. Although Martinez has a confidence, he definitely displays lots of competitiveness when he plays. Simón is a very humble guy with confidence in his own ways. The next award I want to talk about is the Ballon d'Or. So the winner of this award was Rodri. And I'm going to start by saying that I'm one of the biggest fans of Rodri, even though he plays for Manchester City, and I'm a Man U fan. But I believe that his play style and his humility makes him one of the best midfielders in the world. He has a very unique approach when it comes to being a CDM. He's very established as a defender and a passer. He's always in the right place when it comes to offense. In the past season, he had 12 goals and 13 assists for Manchester City. He won the Euros with Spain. He won the Premier League and got pretty far in the Champions League as well. He was the main catalyst of the squad. Even with having Kevin De Bruyne, Rodri gave them something else other teams lacked, and that's passion. In my opinion, though, I felt the award should have gone to Vinicius Jr. If you really look, you would have seen that Vinicius won the Champions League, La Liga, and he won the Supercopa de España. And just by this alone, you can see that the main catalyst of Real Madrid's offense was Vinicius. He had well over 20 goals and close to 20 assists as well. He was very confident on the ball. And I believe the one thing that he lacked in this criteria of the award was the fair play. I believe that the voters saw his sportsmanship as controversial and just did not like him for that criteria of this award. And I think that's what gave Rodri the edge over Vinicius Jr. One thing I want to say is I think it's very disrespectful of Real Madrid to not show up to the ceremony. Mbappe did not go and he won a trophy. Carlo Ancelotti did not go and he won a trophy. And regardless if they knew Vinicius was going to win or not, they should have definitely went and supported and paid respect to the other candidates. Let's get into the next segment of this podcast. We're going to be talking about the marquee matchups that happened this past weekend and this past week in the Champions League, Premier League, and La Liga. But before I get started, I just want to talk about how Erik ten Hag just got sacked as manager of Manchester United. So I kind of saw this coming, as in this weekend, Man U lost to West Ham 2-1. And I just think that it was a long time overdue. Ten Hag clearly had his favorites when it came to the rotation, and overall was not a very effective coach when it came to winning games in the Premier League. He's been here for 2 seasons around there, and now he's going to be replaced by interim head coach Ruud van Nistelrooy. And I think that this is a step in the right direction for Manchester United. They just clearly lacked an identity when it came to being in the Premier League. And this season so far in the Europa League, they've tied 3 games and sit 20-something in that table. Overall, there was no winning culture, and it cannot compare to what Manchester United had with Sir Alex Ferguson. In this next match, I want to talk about what happened against Barcelona versus Real Madrid. So if you do not know, El Clásico happened last weekend on Saturday, where Barcelona played Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. So a couple things to note about this match. It was 0-0 at halftime. And then Barcelona were able to strike 4 goals past Real Madrid in the second half. It all started with Robert Lewandowski in the 54th minute and 56th minute, where he scored 2 goals in 3 minutes. Lamine Yamal then got a goal in the 77th minute, and Rafinha just sealed the deal with the 84th minute goal. I'm very disappointed in Real Madrid. They just lack composure, they lack fundamental, and they just did not have a game plan going into this game. They expected their firepower to beat Barca's, which is true. Real Madrid does have better top-end talent, but Barcelona has a culture, and they have a play style. And when you come into a home match with the mentality that you're going to win, that is just disaster waiting to happen. Barcelona held Madrid offside many times in this match. I believe it was 8 times alone that Kylian Mbappe was offside thanks to Barcelona's offside track. Just by this alone, it's clear that Real Madrid did not make any adjustments. Going into the second half, they felt that they were in this game. But in the second half, once Barca started doing that to them, they completely fell apart. And Barca took full advantage. As I've previewed in the episode before, Real Madrid also took on Dortmund on October 22nd. If you're watching this, like I started watching it, I started watching it in the 30th minute when Daniel Malen got a wide open goal to open the scoring for Dortmund. Then, 4 minutes later, Giddens scores another one to double their lead. Going into halftime, I was very discouraged about this match. I could see that Borussia Dortmund just were playing with Madrid like they were just toys, you know? I just did not have confidence for Madrid, as their attitude was just not one of a Champions League winning side. However, in the second half, though, in the 60th minute, Rudiger opens the scoring for Madrid and brings it back to within one. Vinicius, and two minutes later, scores another one to tie the game up. Lucas Vazquez, in the 83rd minute, puts Madrid above 3-2. 3 minutes later, Vinicius Jr. scores another one to make the score 4-2. And in the 90th minute, he scores another one to get his hat trick and seal the deal 5-2. Madrid won that game, but their win was shortly celebrated as they lost to Barca in the weekend. Another match I just need to speak about is the Arsenal versus Liverpool. This was one of the matches that I was locked into on Sunday. This match had lots of expectation because it had the first place Liverpool and Arsenal, who was in third place. This match could really determine tiebreakers when it comes to the end of the season and who's going to be on top of the Premier League. In this match, you could see that there was just so much intensity played from both sides. In the 9th minute, Bukayo Saka takes on Robertson and drops him to the floor when he scores the opening goal of the match. Shortly after, Van Dijk headers one into the back of the net to equalize for Liverpool. Mikel Merino scores a monster header to put Arsenal on top before the half. And in the 81st minute, Mohamed Salah is assisted by Darwin Nunez, and he scores one to equalize it. This was just such a great match to watch, as it had so much implications on the Premier League table and tiebreakers in general. If you're not watching soccer these past few weeks, what are you doing? It's getting really good, and we're getting to the juicy part of the season where these games are starting to matter, and they're having lots of implications to seeding. Well, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Off the Pitch. I'm your host, DJ Paja. Make sure you stay tuned and watch all the Premier League, La Liga, and Champions League matches that are going to happen in the next month. Thank you so much. I'll see you guys next week.